The recording has begun. You may begin.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, this is Suzanne Chen coming in a few minutes late. My apologies.
Okay, thank you, Suzanne. We're just starting, so perfect timing.
Thank you.
I'll go through the roll call, Bruce.
Yes, please, Lynn.
Philip Shepherd.
Yes.
Mike Rodenbach.
Yes.
Alistair Dixon.
Yes.
Christine Rosette.
Yes.
Tony Holmes.
Yes.
Greg Ruth.
Yes.
Robin Gross.
Present.
Norbert Klein.
I'm here.
Mawaki Chango has sent his apologies. So has Uta Decker. Bruce Chonkin.
Here.
Ross Rader. Tom Keller. Terry Karp.
Here.
Chuck Gomes.
Here.
Edmund Chung. John Bing.
Yes.
And Avery Doria will probably be absent due to traveling. Sophia Bekele. Suzanne Sen.
Here.
Alan Greenberg.
Here.
And then for staff, we have Denise Michelle. She's on
here.
The call.
Sorry.
Olof Nordling.
Here.
Liz Williams.
Here.
Maria Farrell.
Here.
Dan Halloran.
Here.
Karen Lentz.
Here.
Sue Jonkless.
Here.
And have I left out anybody? And Jordan Buchanan.
Yeah, that's right.
Thanks, Jordan.
Okay, thank you, Glenn.
So
the first item on the agenda then is if anyone wants to update any statements of interest. Okay, and then the next item is the council minutes of the last meeting. When were they posted, Glenn?
They were posted on the 18th February in the revised version.
Okay. Are there any changes anyone wishes to make to the minutes? Okay. Would someone like to propose that those minutes be accepted?
I will. This is Chuck.
Thank you, Chuck. Okay. All those in favour of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, thank you. We'll note those minutes as passed. The next item on the agenda is, there's a few things, I guess, in this meeting which are more just getting some formal ratification from the council, mainly from actions that arose from the last meeting. As well as activities on the mailing list in the last month. The first of those is the charter for the working group on protecting the rights of others. At our last meeting, the council approved going ahead with that working group, but wanted a couple of changes made to the charter. Subsequent to the minutes, I guess, being published at that meeting, I drafted a revised set of guidelines or revised charter for that working group and posted that to the list. Are there any comments on that working group charter? Okay, would someone like to nominate then that that charter as posted be formally ratified by the council?
This is Christina, I will.
Thank you, Christina. All those in favour of accepting that charter, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that charter is passed. Has that charter been formally published, Glenn, on our GNSA website?
It is still in the form that it was sent in the email. want me to publish it formally?
If you could formalize it and put into HTML format on the website, that would be appreciated.
I'll do that, please.
Thank you, Glenn. The next item is on the topic of observers in working groups. There was, I guess, quite a bit of discussion on that, I think, following the meeting that we had in Marina Del Rey with a few different ideas. I basically just summarised what I thought would be a consensus view based on the postings to the council list, and just posted, I guess, a starting point, which was basically that we would treat observers in a fairly similar way that we have treated liaisons to the task forces in the past, and that is that a person may apply to be an observer, and the GNSO secretariat would check their bona fide, they're a bona fide person, that their email address is correct, etc., and that they would be observers, but not members of the working group. They would not have a vote, but would be able to participate in the working group through the mailing list, and could attend physical meetings and teleconferences. I guess that's the gist of it. There has been a bit of discussion about what to do if an observer becomes disruptive and whether we have sufficient processes for dealing with that. My view at this stage is some of this discussion should probably be part of the GNSO review and discussions in Lisbon. But I think at a high level, I think I'm comfortable with the way people have suggested that the item is initially dealt with by the chair and the working group itself. And if an item can't be resolved, then the issue would be raised to the council to review, and the council might just form a subcommittee of people to consider the issue and then make a recommendation to the council in a similar way to the way the board deals with reconsideration issues. So having said all that, are there any comments on the process for including observers in working groups?
Terry has a question.
Yes, go ahead, Terry.
Your comments about how we might proceed actually describe situations that might be enormously fraught with acrimony, and whether or not we're willing to risk visiting that upon ourselves. Are we acting within the scope of what we are capable of simply deciding to do? And it seems that there's tremendous potential here for really modifying the intent, if not the actual implementation, of the constituency structure. So are we in fact contemplating doing something that we are that's within our mandate to do? That's a question. It's not an observation. I don't know. But again, I perceive significant potential for us needing to implement these corrective mechanisms that you're describing.
So, Kerry, you're talking about if there's misbehavior.
Not just misbehavior. The thing that I'm actually most concerned about is the fact that discussion can be deliberately nudged in a direction that might suit some special interest faction among observers, regardless of who is franchised.
Oh, I gotcha. Thanks.
Bruce, Tony, I have a follow-on question from Carrie's intervention.
Okay, so what I might do then is take a cue to see who wants to speak on the topic. So I've got Tony. Does anyone else want to talk on this issue?
Bruce, and Chuck, I'd like to speak, but not on necessarily on Carrie's point.
Okay. Glenn, can you just maintain a bit of a cue, because I'm just travelling at the minute, so we have Tony and we have Chuck.
Bruce, this is Ron Hill, and I wanted to announce myself as well.
Thank you, Ram. Welcome. Anyone else?
It's Mike Rodenbaum. I'd like to speak in the queue as well.
Okay, Mike. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, Tony, go ahead.
I just wanted to speak whether there was any clarification or any discussion on the number of observers that could be handled, or whether that's still totally open.
That is still open. The note I posted to the list did not actually put a constraint on number. I'm not aware, I guess, again, with some of these things, whether we've actually hit a limit yet.
and I think as Chuck has pointed out, in some cases numbers can be managed by, in fact, having groups working on sub-issues of a working group. I guess I should also point out that obviously the working group itself isn't actually a GNSO formalised structure like a task force is, but the working group doesn't have the power to make policy recommendations, but it's intended to really see if there is enough support around particular issues to then formally take through a policy development or task force process, or whether the working group simply has a series of issues or recommendations that might help guide staff. So I think this general comment, I suppose, in response to Carrie, is that the working group isn't a decision-making body. But in terms of number, no, Tony, we have not yet put any limit on that as yet.
Okay, so can I interpret that as a response that really says we'll know what the limit is when we see it?
I think that's... Yeah, it's one of those things as whether how far we want to anticipate issues versus do we want to sort of, you know, create a fairly large set of rules around working groups when maybe this sort of area might be part of a general GNSO review discussion.
Okay, to end that discussion, Bruce, I wasn't suggesting that we do have a limit. I think the limit could vary between working groups and between topics, but we should be aware, I think, that we could get into a situation where we do have to face some decision at some time.
Yeah, I think that's right. If I was to use an example that we used for the Australian policy development process, the staff of the ICANN equivalent actually take requests to join a working group at the beginning, and they try and seek balance amongst those requests. So, you know, if they had 20 people from the banking sector wanting to be involved in a working group to do with, let's say it was intellectual property rights or something, and one person from, I don't know, the non-profit sector or something, then they would probably try and balance that out and say, okay, well, either we need to invite some more people from the non-profit sector to be involved, or we need to only take one or two representatives from the banking sector. So that's an approach that's been taken in Australia to try and balance the interest groups, I guess. But again, as Carrie points out, that's a pretty big change in the way we've operated. Was there anything else you wanted to add, Tony?
No, that's fine. Thank you, Bruce.
Okay. Who was next in the queue, Glenn?
Next one is Mike. Chuck, sorry, Chuck.
Okay.
Sorry, couldn't hear.
Okay. Bruce, I just wanted to comment on your last paragraph. I think it's really important that it is the responsibility of people who join a group late to come up to speed on their own. There's a tremendous burden on the chair, on Glenn providing administrative support, et cetera, and others in the group if they don't. And the working group that I've been chairing, we've had members join as lately as this week. So, and that particular case was not the person's responsible fault, but everyone so far has been very good about accepting that responsibility when they come in late. And I think that it's important for people who may chair groups in the future to remember that and to make sure they do that. Otherwise, you can get bogged down just in adding people.
Yeah, I think one of the issues there, Chuck, and it's a little bit just the nature of the way we've considered the requests from people that felt that they weren't able to join constituencies. I think if we're creating a new working group, it may well be best that we have a period of time where people can join. You know, maybe we're giving several weeks' notice, and then after that it locks the membership, because the working groups aren't intended to be long-standing activities. You know, they're meant to be operating for, you know, 30, 60 or 90 days, and I think you're right. I think it becomes difficult to manage if you've constantly got people coming in and out of the group once it's formed. Um, Okay, Nick.
Mike Rodenbach.
Oh, no, can I get Mike? Yeah, just following back on Tony's question and concern, which is exactly what I was going to address as well. I'm wondering whether we should have a statement in here along the lines that the chair or the working group should try to ensure that observers have balanced interests and numbers, for example. I just going to your example, Bruce, of what happened, what could happen in Australia, right? If you get 20 observers from one interest group, it could really bog things down in the group.
Yeah, so and how would you propose that be managed, right?
Well, I think I just would propose at least a sentence in this position statement that you've drafted along the lines that efforts should be made to ensure the working group is equally balanced among interests and the number of members and observers does not become disruptive. Something along those lines. I can draft something up and send it to the list.
Okay.
I'd like to hear anyone's comments on that.
Sorry, what was that, Mike?
I'd love to hear anybody's comments or any concerns with something along those lines.
Okay, I'll keep working through the queue, and then we can come back to that point. Glenn, who was next in the queue?
I think that was the end.
Actually, Philip was on the queue, I hope.
Oh, sorry, Philip.
And can I join after Philip? This is Christina, please.
Yes. And Liz, too, please, Glenn.
I'm sorry, Philip, that was you next, was it?
Yeah, thanks. Just a couple of observations. I think one of which is historical. If we think back to the days of the Names Council, we had an earlier set of fairly broad working groups then, and more or less the process was manageable. I think, again, I think a lot of it comes down just to the chair being reasonable. Mm. And I think for me, I think all we need to say as council is that these are our working procedures. These are the ways we are suggesting we conduct our business, and we reserve the right to change our minds if things go awry. And I think all we need to do at this stage is to say to working group chairs that let us know, let the council chair know if there's a problem, and then we will take that and sort it out for you. You know, what we say now in terms of opening things up may change if circumstances dictate. I think all we need to do is record that we're happy with that principle, and we can move on, and if people are reasonable, then life will be fine.
Okay, thank you, Philip. Who was next in the queue?
The next one is Christina.
Christina, go ahead.
Yes, I was just hoping for some clarification as to what the proper procedure, for lack of a better word, is with regard to the chair and the potential, I guess, invitation to leave the working group in the event of an observer being disruptive. I'd seen various positions posted on the list, and varying from kind of unilaterally in the chair's discretion to the other end being that the chair, in conjunction with the consensus of the working group. And I have no reason to think I'll need to know that, but I would like to know what the current consensus view is on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair question. I guess I'll kind of give you a personal view on that, and then sort of see how others react. And I guess my personal view is just how I go about chairing things. I think a chair is only ever representative of the group. You know, that the chair is elected by the group and manages the processes of the group, but the chair is not a president or a CEO of an organisation. It's merely chairing the meeting. So normally, as a chair, I try and get the sense of the intent of the group before I would take any action. So, you know, if it was a case of, you know, just simple stuff like setting the date of a meeting or setting the time of a meeting, I try and take people's views, and then obviously someone has to make a decision to say, you know, we're having a meeting on this time and date. But that's, you know, I think there's what I would call chair's discretion, but I think the chair is an ultimate authority. So, for example, if the chair didn't like one member of the group, but knew everybody else in that particular group did like that member, then that's probably, and the chair might remove that member, then I'd expect that the ultimate act there is the group would remove the chair. But that's just a sort of personal take on the issue. I mean, what others might think.
Right, and I guess the concern that I have is that I can't imagine a situation in which that even becomes a relevant consideration that isn't already highly divisive and acrimonious. And, you know, certainly I understand your point with regard to, you know, scheduling type issues, but it seems to me that, you know, my personal preference is that it would be something that would have to be, whether discussed informally or not, more along the lines of the consensus of the whole working group, that not we don't care for this person's viewpoint, but that this person is no longer being a productive member of the working group and, in fact, is obstructing the progress and in the interest of moving forward, you know, we all agree that, you know, the person should be invited to leave. That is my personal preference, and I just, you know, was wondering if that was kind of consistent with what everybody else had in mind.
So just tell me how you would run that, Christina, just so I get a sense of it. So you would, if it was done via a mailing list, you would send a note to the mailing list saying that this individual, and actually usually it's more than one. I've often noticed from my experience looking at mailing lists that it takes two to tango sometimes. And sometimes you might have to remove both offending parties to get rid of the issue rather than being seen to pick on one person. But you would send a note to a list and say, perhaps the first step, presumably, as a chair, is that you would try and contact the party's off list and get them to settle down before it gets out of control, I guess, would be my first approach. But let's just say it's consistent and it's malicious and you know they haven't listened to advice, then you would post something to a list saying, I believe the offending party or parties should be removed, what do people think, and then get a response to that, or how do you actually see that working? What do you see, there's a teleconference and you take a vote?
The latter. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily... I think it would probably be better to talk about it and to raise it specifically in the conference. I mean, you could certainly put it. I would certainly think about putting it as a general agenda item. But I just find that very frequently, in the context of email, that you know, email is very easily misinterpreted, and particularly in this type of situation, I can see the potential for things to really get out of hand.
If I can jump in on that, Bruce, one of the things, too, that would probably be wise to do on the part of a chair in a working group would be to send a private email to the offending parties to try and get compliance without going to that level.
Right. And, in fact, you know, I've done something of the sort in trying to, you know, kind of solicit more participation from people. So, you know, I'm certainly a big fan of that. I don't see any need to humiliate people.
Yes, yeah, certainly I agree with what Chuck has said on that. Again, I think, you know, most of what we're talking about is probably just standard processes for being the chair, but you know, we can obviously try and provide some guidelines for how...
Bruce, Philip here, just again, two historical observations. The first of which is that I think in earlier procedures, which may or may not still be current, we foresaw such a problem, and one remedy would be empowering the working group or task force chair to temporarily suspend posting rights for the offending member, a sanction of a week or something. It's just a good cooling off period. We could happily agree to continue with that idea. And secondly, in terms of any more permanent sanction, I think my only counsel would be that decision should be something that we make as counsel. Huh? It's not been made by the general membership of the working group or whatever. That must come back to us as elected representatives.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's probably a good way of dealing with it, Philip. I think that's a good suggestion. So you're saying that a chair of a working group might suspend somebody, whether it's their mailing rights or whatever, for a period of time based on their efforts first to deal with the issue with the individuals involved, and secondly, getting feedback from other members. But then what you're saying, if it's a continuous issue, then it's brought up to the council for resolution. Is that your suggestion?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that sounds reasonable. I think it's worth pointing out that, certainly I've chaired lots of different groups in ICANN, and I've never had a problem that's gone beyond, to the parties involved, and sometimes talking to some of their peers, and there's often a little bit of peer group pressure. So I've never seen anything go beyond a day or two where I see a mailing list, or maybe I hear things on the phone that aren't appropriate, and then I follow up after the meeting, and I don't usually see a recurrence. So, I've never actually seen it get to the point that you're suggesting, Philip, that we need a sort of formal sanction.
Exactly.
Okay, Gwen, did we have others in the queue?
Then we had Liz.
Liz, go ahead.
Liz, hi. I'm sorry, I've got a very poor line tonight, and I've dialed in and out a couple of times. Just a point of clarification, were you anticipating that the observers to working groups would only be from TNSO constituencies, or would you allow observers from other supporting organisations?
The concept of an observer, actually, Liz, was where they were unable to join the GNSO constituency, and that's really the case we've been addressing, that in the meeting in Sao Paulo, we had a few people in the public forum say that they had wanted to be involved in some of the activities, particularly the IDN working group, and then they were apparently unable to join a GNSO constituency. But by definition, they are typically not GNSO constituency members.
Bruce, could I comment on that? This is Chuck.
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
In the Reserve Names Working Group, we have two individual observers. One is actually from a constituency, but not representing the constituency. Another one is from from the GAC community, but not representing the GAC. My own personal feeling is that I think we should be relatively flexible on this for observers. I think that's better, and it's going to be perceived a lot better by the community. And to the extent that it's manageable, I think that's a better way to go.
Okay. The current definition I've put forward doesn't actually contain it either way. So.
Right.
Okay, anyone else wanting to speak on this topic? So what I suggest we do then is I'd like to propose, I guess, that the note that I put forward on observers be ratified, but what I also do as a follow-up is take the minutes from this meeting, because there's been a number of good suggestions, I think, and we'll just elaborate on those working procedures, and then get that, elaboration ratified at our next meeting. I think any of these working procedures, as Philip has said, are working documents. They're working procedures of the council. We can adjust them at any time. And so I'd propose if the council would consider endorsing the current rules for observers. We'll then update those rules based on the suggestions made by people on this call, and then ratify again those suggestions at our next meeting. Would someone like to second that approach?
I'll second it, Bruce.
Who was that?
That was Alistair.
Oh, thank you, Alistair. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, well, note that those observer rules have passed. The next item in the agenda, I guess, are mainly updates. The first one is the IDN working group, which is chaired by Ram Mohan. Ram, are you able to sort of comment on the progress on that group and when you expect to be able to report to the council?
Happy to do that, Bruce. Thank you for having me on the call. The IDN working group has been running full speed ahead for a little while now, and we originally began in January, meeting twice a week, paired phone calls to accommodate different time zones, and the original charter was to go through four key IDN-based documents, and then review a number of open policy items and arrive at some conclusions as to which of these policy items might be worthy of the council's time to build a PDP process. I'm happy to report to you that we've made quite a good amount of progress on this front. We've had robust conversations both on the list as well as in our conference calls. We have we're at the very final stage of our deliberations. We have a draft outcomes report that is currently being discussed by the working group membership. The working group does have 30 plus voting members and about 5 observers in it right now. And we expect to have to release a final report, outcomes report, for the council's attention, that is scheduled to be released on the 21st of March, next Wednesday. A draft outcomes report, work has already begun on, have an outcomes report that is in draft format. Parts of it have been discussed on a conference call earlier this week. The second part of it will be done at another call scheduled tomorrow, and we anticipate having a full report for the council's attention by the 21st. We'll also be ready in Lisbon to speak on the recommendations, or really not recommendations, areas of agreement, as well as areas of support that have come about from the working group's deliberations. And it's been a good experience in terms of bringing together a disparate set of individuals, some who represent constituencies and others who are there in their own individual capacity with differing levels of knowledge and experience. I think you will also find that some of the IDN working group's work reflected in the outcomes of the reserve names working group, and in the area of the PRO working group, if necessary, will provide some advice, but at this point we don't plan on providing any advice anywhere else. So that's my report.
Ram, could you just give a bit of a perspective of what liaisons you're conducting with other groups? Because I'm aware, particularly at Lisbon, I think, I believe there will be a number of other IDN-related groups probably meeting there, and I assume that you've got some mechanisms for liaison between those, namely probably the CCNSO and the GAC.
Yeah, we've actually, and thank you for reminding me of that, Bruce. We've had some good interactions in that area already. The chairs of the GAC IDN committee, as well as the CCNSO IDN working group, Ming Cheng and Pankaj Agarwala and myself, we've had two liaison calls so far, where we've been updating each other on what's happening in our respective committees that we chair. We will have both a liaison meeting in Lisbon among the chairs, but in addition to that, we also plan on having some liaisons from the GNSO working group into the GAC discussions on IDN right in Lisbon. The GNSO working group appointed one of its members to be a liaison to the joint CCTLD GAC working group on IDN. And so far, there have not been a great deal of meetings done there, but we'll continue to have that liaison until this working group disbands, which will be in Lisbon.
And is there anything formally happening between your working group and the President's Advisory Committee on IDN?
No, at this point there is nothing formally happening between those two. Haven't actually given it a great deal of thought, but now that you mention it, it seems appropriate that the outcomes report that that we have, once we are done with our discussions tomorrow, that perhaps before we finalize it, that perhaps we send a copy of it. I plan to send a copy of it anyway to the chairs of the CCNSO and the GAC working groups for their for them to pass on, or to at least consider the points that we're making. Certainly pass it on to the chairs of the IDN PAC as well. Thank you for the suggestion.
Thanks, Ram. Any questions for Ram on the IDN work?
This is Chuck. I do.
Go ahead, Chuck.
Okay, Ram, the first question is there an end date to the IDN working group, or is it ongoing until it finishes?
The IDN working group finishes its work. Really, the way I look at it, Chuck, when we issue the report on the 21st, the working group would have mostly completed its chartered work. I will continue in Lisbon to provide comments and take questions, etc. But basically, at Lisbon, the working group is done and it's disbanded.
And that was a leading question to the next question. We're going to, as you probably heard or will hear, we're going to finish the reserve names working group and submit our report. We've had our last meeting today. Unless the group is extended, but and we will deliver our report tomorrow. In fact, I will be sending you a copy, and it would be very helpful. I know that we've had some good liaison activity between the two groups, and hopefully that has covered most issues. But we really would like the IDN working group to take a look at the final recommendations that are being made and receive some feedback from your group in that regard. So that's why I asked when it was supposed to end, because I realize you're probably going to be pretty well tied up just getting your report out by next week. And at the same time, it would be very beneficial if the group could look at our recommendations, especially as they relate to IDNs, and provide us some feedback.
Chuck, happy to do that. At this point, the working group we still have two telephone calls left before we conclude our work. So I suspect that we will be able to steal some cycles to provide some feedback on the document that you're preparing, should it be required.
Right.
Okay. Any other questions for Ram? Okay. Thanks, Ram, for joining us today and giving us that update. We look forward to seeing the final document.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you. Next update is from the Who Is Task Force, and I believe we have Jordan Buchanan has joined us for that.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks, Bruce. As hopefully the Council is already aware, the Who Is Task Force has issued its final report. In the final report, we, by a slim majority, recommend the set of actions that essentially we've been discussing for quite a while in the form of the OPOC proposal.
Can you speak up, please? I can't hear you.
I can try. we recommend a set of actions, set of policy actions in the form of the OPOC proposal, which I'll summarize momentarily, but which we've been discussing for quite a while. There's also a minority position, which was endorsed by three of the constituencies' representatives within the task force. A quick summary of the recommendations of the task force are essentially, number one, that the amount of information that is displayed in the WHOIS system for the registrant is significantly reduced. And basically, the only information that would be displayed would be the registrant's name, as well as some information about, as well as the country, and then there would be technical information about the domain. The administrative and technical contacts would also be replaced by a new form of contact called the operational point of contact, and that person would be responsible for resolving or passing on information to help to resolve any operational issues with the domain. And other changes incorporated into the proposal, into the proposed recommendations, include some changes to the way complaints about accuracy are handled. It introduces a requirement that registrars, upon discovering the information, upon being notified that information is inaccurate and confirming that that's the case, actually either suspend the domain name or delete it. There's also some changes that require that the registrar actually verify that the email address that provided in response to a complaint to update the information actually works and is responded to by whoever the contact is. I think that's a quick summary of the OPOC proposal, and those are the recommendations that were supported by a majority on the task force and became the recommendations of the task force. There was a strong minority that had a different set of policy recommendations that are also included in the report, and that's called the Special Circumstances Proposal. This proposal doesn't change the default information that's displayed in WHOIS, but rather provides registrants who believe that they have a sort of good faith fear that the information might be used to allow their safety, or there's a couple other circumstances to be. But in any case, if information in WHOIS can be used for a specific bad purpose by some third party, it allows registrants to request that their information be removed from the WHOIS. That request would be evaluated by a third party based on a set of criteria, and if the criteria were met, then the registrant information would be removed from the WHOIS. That's a brief summary of the two recommendations. There's one other point that's probably worth noting, which is one of our terms of references dealt with not only the question of whether the information that's displayed in the WHOIS should change, which we recommend that they do, but also ask the question of if we change the information that is displayed in the WHOIS, whether there should be an alternative means of getting access to that information. This is a point upon which I don't think there was a majority view of the task force. There were no specific recommendations on this point. The proponents of the OPOC proposal itself generally thought that simply contacting the registrar and essentially discussing with them or negotiating with them a mechanism to get access to the information, whether that be through some sort of due process procedure through law, or whether the information might simply be made available in good faith requests in some circumstances, would be essentially a decision made by the registrar based on the nature of the request. One constituency that supported the OPOC proposal, the registry representatives, noted that they thought that some further work was required in this particular area. And I actually do think that this is the area in which we had sort of, I think, the least concrete discussions within the constituency. There weren't a lot of very clear proposals on how to deal with this particular issue other than to simply contact the registrar and obtain the information that way. So it could be that if the policy recommendations were adopted, and I think some in the task force advocated this, that it may be that it might be worth essentially implementing most of the policy recommendations but then continuing to do work and maybe be informed by ongoing sort of operational reality as to what the best approach to dealing with this issue on an ongoing basis might be. Other than that, I believe that the current report finalizes the rest of the terms of reference items that we've been assigned by the council. So unless the council directs otherwise, I've concluded that the work of the task force has been completed, and we don't plan on having any additional meetings at this point.
Okay, thank you, Jordan, and I'd like to, I guess, formally convey thanks both to you for
for chairing this working group over an extended period of time, and also to the individual is it your understanding that a report will be presented in the meeting in Lisbon, or can you lay out what you understand the meetings will be?
So I don't know the answer to that question, actually.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll answer it for you, at least my understanding. I believe there will be a meeting with the GAC. I guess it's probably now more the council, but I'm sure working group members would be welcome to attend with the GAC on there, who is principals. And I believe is it I guess it's the GNSA Public Forum where we would allocate some time for any further public feedback. The other comment I would make, I guess, just based on your analysis, which I think was an excellent summary, I guess, of the current position and where some of the interests lie. Now that the report is with the council, and I do note that at least on a constituency basis, you seem to have three constituencies in favour and three against the current recommendation. If it would not be possible at the council level to perhaps do some further work on the implementation issues of the current, the majority recommendation in the report, to see if we can address some of the concerns that are still existing amongst the constituencies that were not in favour, particularly perhaps with respect to data access, and as I understand, Jordan, I think there's also still some, different interpretations of what the role of the OPAC contact would be, in other words, what responsibilities they would have to respond to material provided by an external party. Is that also correct?
I suppose so. I think there is some discussion about what the role of the OPAC does. And I guess the point of disagreement arises mostly from whether or not there should be a codified set of rules saying that the OPAC has to engage in certain types of, responsiveness levels or so on, essentially some sort of service level agreement for the OPAC. I think the view of the proponents of the OPAC proposal was that the having an OPAC there does not alleviate the registrant from any liability or any responsibilities with regards to the domain name. And as a result, it would be in their interest to make sure that they had an understanding with the OPAC as to how to handle various types of requests that they might receive.
Okay, so I guess my general suggestion, I guess, for the council to consider, and I don't think it needs to make a decision at this meeting, but probably does need to in Lisbon, is whether it might be useful to create a short-term working group similar to what we've done with say reserved words, where we set a time limit and we open the membership up, particularly to those that will have to either implement the recommendations of the working group with respect to being a registry or registrar, and perhaps those that are currently accessing WHOIS and might want to just understand the details of how some of the changes would impact them, and perhaps potentially look at guidelines for how to respond to requests for information, etc. Anyone else like to comment on the report from Jordan?
Yes,
Philip.
Okay, I have Chuck, and then I have Philip. Anyone else?
Tony Harris.
Tony, anyone else? Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
Yes, thanks, Jordan. I think I understood you to say that you were suggesting that the some of the elements of the recommendation could be implemented while some work is ongoing. Could you be more specific in what you think, what elements of the recommendations could be implemented before additional work is done?
Yeah, so I actually think all of the elements could be implemented before additional. I've yet to hear any ideas with regards to the access to data question that seem to get us any closer to building some sort of consensus within the community on that question. And I think it may be informative to actually implement the policy and gain some operational experience in order to guide that discussion. And I think within a relatively short period of time after implementing the policy, you might get a better understanding of how some of the practical realities play out and how what sorts of mechanisms might be appropriate in order to provide access on an ongoing basis to people that need.
So you think that the OPOC proposal could actually be implemented and then we'll work on the how access is given later? Is that what you're saying?
I think that's one possibility.
Yeah, and that would be one that the registries would oppose, because we really think that that solution to access has to be dealt with before you could successfully implement the OPOC proposal. And that wasn't directed just at you, Jordan. That was at the whole group.
Sure.
Thank you, Bruce. I just have a question really about the use of language. As I understand it, and I think Jordan mentioned this, as did you, Bruce, the voting on the task force was divided and to my mind split right down the middle. Three constituencies in favour, three against. And what seems to distinguish the language saying the task force recommendation versus a minority recommendation was the vote of just one nominating committee person. Is that correct, Jordan?
That is correct. Yep. The voting formula that was used was I'll make two notes. One is that the council did provide guidance to us. I guess that Avery, as appointed as an expert to the task force, was a voting member of the task force.
And that
the voting formula that we used in deciding which was the majority position was agreed upon by the various members of the task force.
It was, my understanding, was two votes per constituency. No, what I'm saying is that to the outside world, to ordinary speakers, the difference between a task force recommendation and a minority report, to my mind, is normally significant. A minority report means there was a minority that goes beyond just one voice who has something to say. In this case, I'm very concerned about the characterization of minority report as being basically three constituencies representative of thousands of people, of thousands of organizations around the world, being characterized in that way. And the only difference being the opinion of one of our very worthy nominating committee members who don't have a constituency to represent, and therefore they only can take a judgment in terms of their own experience, etc. So I think I have great concern about the way that we are using language to describe the outcome of the report here. If we're saying it's a split report, half said this, half said that, there was one vote which went in a particular direction, that would be, to my mind, a more accurate description to the common language. On the second point of implementation, I think that actually there was a lot of common ground on the behalf of all constituencies in terms of some of the proposals behind that. And I think the reason, and Alistair, I think, can probably comment better than I can on this, the reason, I think, for some of the reticence of the voting of those who voted against was that there was a substantial list of unresolved issues, and therefore we were unhappy about being seen to vote for a job that was not quite fully done. So let me finish there and let others comment.
Philip, if I can just sort of comment at a purely procedural level. I'm assuming that the language, to some degree, that's used in the report would be consistent with the PDP process itself, because I think they do talk about the concept of reaching a position, and I agree the position might only be a majority of one, but once a majority of one is reached, I think they then define some of the language that's used after that, and that recommendations are reported based on their, being a majority recommendation, and that
other recommendations that have support of a group would be classified as a minority. I'm just trying to find the use of the bylaws itself. But that, what I'd suggest is that we perhaps just get the General Counsel's office to review the language and see that it is.
Yeah, so Bruce, we actually had some discussion about this within the task force, and actually did. I think Maria did speak with Dan Halloran on this topic, and I think my reading of the bylaws, and I think it's I think the current structure of the report is endorsed by the staff's reading of the bylaws as well. Is that the purpose of the report is to present a set of policy recommendations that are endorsed by the task force, and that essentially is the majority view of the task force. There is special deference given to, in a situation in which there's not a supermajority support for those recommendations, which is the case here, special deference is given to the views of the, any other views that are held by members of the task force, and they're required to, it's required actually that the report does include those views as well as any reasons that they would support support their views. That's actually distinct from a minority report, which I think would be sent under a separate cover under the PDP. So here, because we didn't have a supermajority support for the recommendations, we also include the minority report and in the body of the report itself, so that as well as mentioning in the executive summary that there's not a supermajority support for these recommendations, so that they, so a reader can take a look at the alternative recommendations. I think that's what's called for by the bylaws.
Thank you, Jordan. And so I'll just pick up on the second part of your comments, which is about that you felt as a representative of the business constituency that. There was some support, I suppose, for some of the concepts in an OPAC, but you weren't comfortable with some of the implementation issues. Is that something that perhaps yourself and other members of the, I suppose, other councillors from the business and ISP and intellectual property constituency, it would be useful, perhaps at least for the council, to have a fairly succinct list of, I don't know, maybe what your top five issues are, and maybe that might help the council identify whether there is hope for a working group to resolve some of those issues or whether those issues are unsolvable. But is that something you could undertake to do?
Personally not, but I'm sure as a constituency, yes.
Bruce, it's Maria here. Can I just make a comment as well?
Yes, go ahead, Maria.
Thanks. The staff is also preparing a set of staff notes on some discussion points on potential implementation issues with the task force recommendation of the OPOC proposal and also with the special circumstances proposal, which did indeed come a close second in terms of task force votes. So we've put together with the legal and operations department some notes, some observations which we have made from the point of view of having implemented policies in the past and from our experience with the agreements at the moment to try and throw some light on some of the issues that are outstanding with both of those proposals. So I think that, you know, our aim is that would be helpful to the council and to, indeed to any groups that are taking this issue forward.
Yeah, thank you, Maria. So I think it would be particularly useful to try and articulate what different groups, particularly those groups that have chosen to oppose the, let's say it's a simple majority recommendation for the task force as to what they think the sticking points are to gain their support. Because I think certainly the council has a duty to try and take an output from a task force, identify any remaining issues that may be solvable, to see if we can actually increase the majority. And I do believe historically with transfers, when we received the Transfers Task Force report, there was a Transfers Implementation Working Group formed that met, I think, probably over a period of a number of weeks rather than months, that did some further work or refinement or implementation, if you like, that then went back to the council. And I think that did help that transfer task force, or try transfers recommendation. I think it certainly had a super majority support at the council level before it went to the board. So I think that would be very helpful if you could do that before Lisbon, Maria.
Certainly. In fact, we plan to circulate that with, if not tonight, certainly within the next 24 hours.
Okay. And Tony Harris, you're next in the queue.
Well, actually, both Chuck and Philip voiced the two concerns that I had, so I'll defer to the next person on the list.
Okay. So anyone else wants to speak to these recommendations? Just sort of make one final comment, and perhaps Jordan can comment on this. The two proposals, in my mind, at least as I saw them presented in Sao Paulo, and I haven't really looked at them in detail since, but I didn't get the sense that they were mutually exclusive. So, you know, it could be potentially possible to take one set of recommendations, which is a simple majority of one, and I guess workshop those a bit further at some form of council working group. And then potentially go, after that's done, look at the, special circumstances proposal and see if there's some elements of that that could gain greater support as well. Am I correct in thinking that, or do you see them as mutually exclusive?
I personally think that's probably the case. I actually made a chair's proposal, which was a hybrid of the two, and incorporated some elements of both. I guess the problem we faced within the task force was that we couldn't find any hybrids or alternative proposals that any of the various representatives liked more than either of these two positions. So while it might be that they would be, you know, it might be that it's possible to craft such a thing, whether or not you would be able to get some people to support it would be another question entirely.
Okay. Any other comments on the WHO's task force output?
Yeah, this is Suzanne. If I could just put a question out.
Yes, go ahead, Suzanne.
Thank you. As you know, we are scheduled to meet on the Sunday, March 25th, I believe it is, for a relatively short period in the afternoon between 2 o'clock and 3:45. And having met that morning ourselves on version 5, which has just been put in circulation of the draft GAC Who Is Principal. So I've got fingers crossed. I'm optimistic that we might be able to put those to bed, but you never know. We will hopefully know by certainly the time of our meeting with the GNSO and the Who Is Task Force whether we can share them with you as final. Part of our challenge is that is technically a working group meeting, and we won't get approval until the plenary, which is not until Tuesday. But at least we can walk you through it. I think what the GAC would be most interested, though, in better understanding is what the council now needs or intends to do with this task force report. Because I confess, I don't quite know how to interpret or decipher the majority versus minority, those kinds of nuances for the GAC. So I'd rather have the GNSO and the Who Is Task Force speak directly. But I know there's a lot of curiosity as to what happens now.
Yeah, well, I think formally, a bit like your processes, Suzanne, I think formally in terms of our next steps, I think that will probably be a motion or a decision made at the council meeting in Lisbon, which will actually occur after your... or after our working group meetings on the weekend.
Right.
So all we could do is probably cover some of the discussion that was in the council meeting today, you know, really just report to the GAC some of the views that have been expressed, but just indicate that the next steps will be as a result of the council decision in Lisbon.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Well, once again, Jordan, thank you for taking the time to give us a summary of the status of the report, and thank you again for chairing the group, and also please convey the thanks of the council to the members of the working group as well.
Certainly, I'll be glad to do that.
Thank you. The next topic then is an update on the PDP
working group. I don't know whether we have Avery on the call. If not, perhaps Liz can give an update on that.
Sorry, Bruce, did you just give me the call then? I couldn't quite hear you.
Sorry, Liz, I was just saying if we don't have Avery, who's the chair of that working group, on the call, if perhaps, Liz, you could give an update on where that's at, what the next steps are.
Yep, sure. I don't know how detailed you want to go into it, but the draft task force report has been posted on the GNSO's website, and the public comment period has been opened for that and will run through until the end of the Lisbon meeting. Bruce, did you want me to give an overview of the recommendations?
Look, I don't think you need to do that. I'm just conscious of time, actually.
Sure, that's fine. I just don't quite know what you want me to do, so I'm happy to provide whatever information.
Actually, you could. Are there any recommendations that have majority support, I guess?
Yes, there are, and they are listed in the Terms of Reference Recommendation Summary, which is at the front of the document, so if you don't want to wade through the lot, then you just go to page 7. 1A is that there should be a policy guiding registry agreement renewal, that registry agreements should be a commercially reasonable length, that the present limitations to consensus policies are appropriate and should continue, that certain policy-making responsibilities should be delegated to sponsored TLD operators. Those four things are consistent with conditions under for existing registries. The group has made a recommendation that ICANN staff should immediately implement a system that avoids individual negotiations of ICANN fees and provides consistency unless there's an established justification for disparate treatment. The group has also recommended the establishment of a task force or advisory committee to examine budgeting issues. That includes allocation of revenue and budget oversight and budget approval processes. There is majority support for some further study about registry traffic data. It's a very long statement of work proposal, which I'm not going to repeat now, and that ICANN should establish some baseline requirements for security and stability of registries, that they would seek advice from the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, the SSAC, after consultation with registry operators. That's a very top-line summary, but I urge all of the GNSO Council members to read the draft report as it stands. The next steps are that there will be some minor modifications to the report, principally textual edits, and just making sure that we have the proposed recommendations drafted exactly correctly. That will take place, the meeting will take place on, Glenn, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's Saturday afternoon in Lisbon. And I would imagine that shortly after that, the report from the task force would be transmitted to the council for voting, and that report will take into account any public comments that have been submitted. There are no public comments so far that have been submitted, but if any of you wish to make further commentary, then I would urge you to do so through the public comment forum, and if there's anyone else, like observers that have been part of the process, then urge them to make comments through the public comment period, which will run, as I say, up until about the 27th of March. But I'm happy to take further questions either now or offline.
Okay, thank you, Liz. Are there any questions for Liz on PDP 506?
I have one, Bruce. It's Chuck.
Okay, go ahead, Chuck.
Liz, do you anticipate then that in the council meeting in Lisbon, that the council may be taking action on this report?
Chuck, I don't think that would be realistic to expect, because the public comment period runs right up until the GNSO council meeting starts. And if I'm to include, as I'm required to under the bylaws, the public comments that relate to the terms of reference and to the proposed recommendations, it will not give me enough time to resubmit a report to the webmaster to be properly posted for the council to consider. Now that's a function of, unfortunately it's an internal function of webmastering and posting and all that kind of protocol that needs to take place around posting of documents. So I think the council could probably have a copy of it to take, but I don't think that the council will take action until the next meeting after Lisbon.
That's
which
helpful.
Would be the April meeting.
Yeah, that's very helpful. I just want to make sure that we as registry councillors have plenty of lead time to go back to our constituents.
Yes, I think it's unrealistic to expect it to formally take, for the council to formally take action on it until the April meeting.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Chuck and Liz. Any other questions for Liz? Okay, so then on to item 9 of the agenda, which is update on
PDP December 05. As many of you would be aware, we did hold a meeting a few weeks ago in Marina Del Rey and further refined some of the recommendations, particularly relating to some of the string check criteria and also relating to some of the objection processes that may occur. That report will be updated and I assume published in the next day or so, or updated that report in the next day or so. Liz, is that correct?
Yeah, Bruce, as soon as you give me any edits you wish to make, that would be terrific, and I'm hoping that takes place in the next 24 hours. I have on my desk at this very moment the last version of it. That needs to go to the webmaster to be posted, and I'm hoping that will be distributed to the group tomorrow afternoon, close of business.
I suggest you just post it because I won't have time to review it the next 24 hours.
Okay, fine, no problem. I wish to thank a couple of people anonymously for providing editing and proofing checking, because many of the recommendations that we discussed, the report is now restructured into three key elements, which is the set of principles, the set of policy recommendations, and the set of implementation guidelines. And I did ask a very small group of people to anonymously review it so that I could make sure that we picked up anything from basic typos to senses and nuances of recommendations that I may have missed.
One of the things that I think is still an outstanding item, and I don't know whether you can give an update on this, but as I understand, there is an action on staff to investigate potential dispute resolution bodies.
Yes, there is, and Bruce, I have a chart right in front of me now that talks about mediation, arbitration and litigation, and I'll be distributing that tomorrow morning.
Okay, so then this kind of moves on, I guess, as to what we do as a committee relating to that in Lisbon. If there is a substantial report from staff on what they've done as far as dispute resolution or some of the options there, I would suggest weekend, could be either Saturday or Sunday morning, that we convene the group to go through that and understand a bit further what the dispute resolution options would be.
Yeah, Bruce, that's well under in hand at the moment. And I would urge the group, there's rather more significant issues that need to be resolved. One is the status of the working group for IDNs and whether they have any material to insert for the new TLD's report. The second is the two working groups on reserve names and on the protection of rights of others group, the pro group, which Christina is chairing. Those two groups, I think, are progressing well, but we need to be in a position where we can say that the work is complete to a certain point and the new TLD's report can proceed, and that any further elements of the work that either of those two groups might want to do would fall into the category of implementation guidelines and would not be critical path showstoppers for the finalisation of the policy recommendations. And that's very important in terms of the development of the base contract, which pretty much requires a finalised set of policy guidelines, policy recommendations, and for the implementation plan. And the group already knows, and I'm sure that I don't need to remind you, that we have an internal implementation planning call every week that enables us to develop further the implementation plan, and many of you who were in Los Angeles saw the draft of that plan. The other part of the puzzle, of course, which is a critical piece of the puzzle, is the finalisation of the GAP public policy principles. And many of you will be aware that the elements that relate to string criteria and to selection procedures with respect to selection of string criteria depend quite heavily on the completion of the public policy principles at the Lisbon meeting or whenever the GAC gets to it. So those are the three main elements of outstanding work that need to be included in the report. In terms of the structure of the report, I've made placeholder discussion points for each of those elements. And I would expect that, and I've just seen the draft tonight of the Reserve Names Working Group report, that the Council will act expeditiously on dealing with the work of the working groups to formalise those straw poll recommendations into things that can be included in the new TLD's report. And the other thing that I think I need confirmation on is that post-Lisbon, it's the intent of the group to run a public comment period on the principles, the policy recommendations of the implementation guidelines to ensure sure that we can include any public commentary in the final version of the work that needs to go into preparation for a board report.
Yeah, so, and Chuck, I believe you had a request relating to a potential meeting in Lisbon on, I believe, related to reserve names and how that
is incorporated. Yes, sure. And you skipped over the item on the update of the reserve names group, but I can very quickly tell you that that we will deliver our report tomorrow. And our deadline was March 16th, and so the report will be delivered tomorrow, barring any things we haven't anticipated. So, just final edits are being made today, and a little more editing tomorrow, and then it will be sent out. Just to let you know, and this ties into your question, Bruce, that we it's a fairly big report in terms of information, because there are at least nine, and if you break them down into smaller subcategories, even more than that, categories of reserve names that were looked at. And so I had suggested on the council list that it may be useful to have a session in Lisbon before our regularly scheduled sessions that would provide an opportunity for a review of the report and some interaction with counselors to get a better understanding. Now, there might also be usefulness in doing that before our session with the GAC at lunch on Saturday. I don't know if that's realistic Saturday morning or not, but I'm certainly willing to do that if there's interest. I think if we cover that topic in one of our regular meetings, because of the tremendous number of issues that are in the report, that it may take an exorbitant amount of time of any other meeting that we do it in.
So Chuck, you'd like to have a separate meeting that just considers that report, is that
right?
Yeah,
and I'm not necessarily saying I want that. I'm throwing it out to the council. If we don't do that, I think that, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time in one of our other meetings if we do it then. But I'm flexible to however the council wants to do it. I just had suggested that might be useful because it is it's a big report.
Okay. Well, what I suggest then, I'll work with Glenn as Virginia Soap Secretariat just to have a look at the scheduling, particularly on the weekend. We've kind of allocated a room, I guess, and it's just a matter of how we use that room and what times are available, because we have meetings with the GAC as well. But I'd propose that we have at least an hour talking about the work that the staff has done on dispute resolution, etc. And hopefully we can allocate a dedicated hour just to review the output of reserve names. It is quite, that reserve names work is becoming quite an important issue, and I did speak briefly with the chair of the CCNSA yesterday, because I think we need to have an understanding fairly early on what their views are with respect to possible processes for CCTLDs to apply for CCTLD operators to apply for some form of IDN-related names for their use, and maybe it's prudent to perhaps reserve some specific names from the new GTLD process while some of those issues are being resolved. So I think that this reserve names issue, I think, has become fairly important. The other thing I suggest we do in terms of the process thing is perhaps later in the week, because we do have a public forum on new GTLDs, and there will be constituency meetings, and I'm sure constituency meetings on when's constituency meetings, Glenn? On the Tuesday. Yeah, so it may make sense for the committee, if we can find a slot, to spend an hour or so on either Wednesday or Thursday just to take in all the discussions that have happened on new GTLDs during the week and decide how we want to address those in the new GTLD report. So I'll attempt to find a slot that we can use for that as well.
Now, Bruce, with regard to the reserve names working group, we will have completed our work tomorrow, but there is the option for a 30-day extension. I'm assuming that probably no decision will be made on that until our council meeting in Lisbon. But that's another reason why it would be helpful for the council to understand the recommendations. There are quite a number of them that the recommendation basically comes down to needing more work. There are certainly some that could be, you know, assuming the council agrees with the recommendations, that could be probably put right into the new TLD process. But Liz, you had mentioned that, that maybe the extension period should be on implementation. I can assure you that the ones that need more work aren't ready for implementation.
Well, Chuck, that's, and I agree with you because I've read all the reports and I've posed those questions to your group, and it's not sufficient to just say dump it all into the implementation plan, because that's not where we will run into problems. We need to have a guidance from the council and from the working groups about formalised policy recommendations. So, in a sense, I was being flippant, but I don't mean to be flippant about very, very serious work, particularly with respect to reserve names, and particularly on the ones that cause me most concern, which are geopolitical identifiers, geographic terms, and the treatment of the single letters and letters, digits, and hyphens.
Thanks. And by the way, Bruce, when we get past this on reserve names, I do have a question, a broader question with regard to the new TLD process when it's appropriate.
Yes, I think the other thing that's probably worth doing, Chuck, for our meeting with the GAC is to perhaps, you know, choose a few elements of the reserve names work would be of interest to the GAC and just raise that as something for them to consider. So if you have gone into issues such as geopolitical identifiers, it would be worth at least conveying to the GAC what you've done in that area.
Yeah, that will be in the report.
Okay. And you had one further question on the process?
Yes. I don't know how realistic, and I suspect Suzanne can't even predict this, but how realistic it is that the GAC will complete their principles for new TLDs. But my question is this. If they're not finished by Lisbon, do we just hold up the new TLD process waiting for the GAC?
I think I'll answer that just from a procedural point of view. Procedurally, the GNSO does not need to wait for the GAC. The GAC actually advises the board. So procedurally, we can complete our work, submit it to the board, and then the board would have to take GAC input. Now, my desire, if you like, is to avoid final GAC input that in some way contradicts a recommendation from the council, and so obviously the earlier that we can receive some feedback or earlier we can receive those final guidelines from the GAC, the better. But if we don't receive them, procedurally we're not required to wait, because the GAC actually advises the board directly. It doesn't. We're not required to wait.
Thank you.
Suzanne, do you want to just comment on the broader issue about what timing you're expecting?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Of course, as we all know, it's never entirely clear just what might happen. I think it's always a bit of a crapshoot in terms of whether we can gain a full consensus. We don't have the sort of flexibility, if you will, that you might have of voting and having a majority versus a minority report. We work on the basis of consensus. So the goal here is to get text that everybody at the GAC table can sign on to. We are now into a version 5, and that was just issued 2 days ago, and several other countries, including the U.S., are submitting comments. So I anticipate that the discussions in Lisbon will be fairly detailed. By the end of the day, it may well be that we think we've got a text that we're comfortable with and would forward to plenary, but I really couldn't tell you at this point in time. Certainly, if it had to go over to another meeting, we wouldn't want to see it linger beyond San Juan, no. We would like this to be final. Our goal is to finalize both sets of principles in Lisbon. if we cannot do that, then to finalize these details at the next meeting.
Okay, and so my intent, I think, Suzanne, would be for at least the council to finalise its work on new GTLDs probably prior to Zone 1, obviously as much feedback as we can get prior to finalising that, the better. But I would like to have the new GTLD recommendations available to the board by Zone 1, I guess, as an objective from the council.
That's good to know. Thank you. And, of course, I'm assuming we will have this conversation about expectations and timelines in our face-to-face, which is Saturday.
Yes, we will.
Okay.
And that will be in Lisbon when?
That is Saturday, Tony, the 24th, from 12:15 to 2:30.
Okay, thanks.
And Suzanne, just another, I guess, procedural question for you. Has the GAC formalised whether they will be open or closed discussions with the GNSO?
My sense in talking to our chair, Yannis, who will be stepping into the chair at this meeting, and the scribe, my colleague Bill D of the commission, and we're both sort of managing these two texts, we're very comfortable to have them as open meetings, which I believe we did in Brazil.
Good, okay. Thank you. But I think it's just important just from the point of view of advising GNSO members, because I think a number would that are those that have arrived early on the Saturday would probably like to at least listen into some of those discussions.
Sure.
Okay. Well, that's all the items I had under council business. I have...
Bruno, about that.
I
want to say I was out for about 40 minutes. My line was just broken. I want to say I'm back again.
Okay, thank you, Norbert.
I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Christina. I just wanted to ask a clarifying question with regard to the Working Group on Protecting the Rights of Others. I don't know that we formally extended the deadline, and if so.
Oh, yes, that's a good point, yeah. I had suggested, because that working group took a while to get started, that I think the original deadline was April or something, wasn't it? And I think I had suggested extending that to May to give that working group enough time to complete its work. Perhaps if we... Do you want to propose a procedural motion just to extend the deadline until May, Christina?
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
In May.
Well, that was actually going to be my next
question. Yeah, you choose the date.
Had we originally said the beginning of April or the end of April? My notes aren't clear on that.
It's Liz here, Bruce. I think that we need to be very careful if we're going to complete the work of the PRO group and the RN group and all the other working groups in time for the production of a board report that may well be ready for Puerto Rico. We need to give me enough time. This is a purely self-serving modification to what Christina may propose. But I would prefer that it is no later than the 21st of May.
All right, so let's make it the 21st of May then.
When's our council meeting in May?
Yeah, I was just thinking that, Chuck, I'm not sure that we've got it scheduled after...
Just wait a sec, I'll have a look.
No, there's no schedule after Lisbon.
It would be very helpful if the report was done before our council meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll just synchronise it. I think normally we have council meetings on a Thursday. What's that end up being? The 21st of May. You could make it like the, let's say it's the 24th or something, which is a Thursday.
So if it was the 21st, there'd be 3 days before the council meeting. So that's,
yes, that's not enough time.
Okay, so how about we get it until 17th, and we'll probably look at a council meeting around the 24th.
Certainly.
Okay, so make it the 17th of May. All those in favour, please say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, note that deadline is extended. At this point, I'd like to, hand over the chair of this meeting to Philip Shepherd to deal with any items anyone wants to deal with on the board election. As a candidate, I am available if anyone, if the council wishes. Otherwise, at the discretion of the chair, I can also drop off the call. So I'll hand over to Philip and let Philip run it from here.
Bruce, thank you very much. I think just there were two questions. One of which is we've seen posted by Glenn to the council on the 12th of March the standard procedure for election. I was very happy with that. That's different to what we've had in the past. I presume everybody is also happy with that. Okay. And the second question is really, we've also seen a candidate statement sent by the one and only candidate we have for this election this time, that's Bruce, which has gone to the list. But nevertheless, I think the opportunity for an interactive session with a board candidate, regardless of the circumstances of the election, is important. And to my mind, we have two options for that. Either we have a call at some point, which would include council and potentially constituency leadership, or given the timing that Lisbon is coming between now and the date of the election, we see if we can steal 15 or 20 minutes in one of our sessions in Lisbon to have that interactive session instead of a call. I'm very conscious that we've got a lot of active task forces, working groups at the moment, which are taking up a lot of time on calls. And so my preference would be that if we can steal the time in Lisbon, that would work very well. Let me open it to discussion, see if anybody has any comments to make on that.
Well, Philip, this is Chuck. We have the fortunate situation this time that I think we all know the candidate quite well. And I'm not opposed to having a session where we focus on Bruce further and have a chance to ask him questions. But to be very frank, I'm not sure it is nearly as necessary or necessary at all in this particular case. But again, I would support it if others want to do that. That's fine.
Thank you, Chuck. Any other points? Okay, well, let's put a suggestion. I think... In any case, I mean, what we do as council in putting up candidates to board is important. I think that interaction is useful, and we shouldn't forgo that, despite the quality of candidate that we have at this occasion. Let me suggest the following. One, that Ben, if you're able to steal, say, 15 minutes in the process in Lisbon for such a discussion, please do so and let me know. If that looks impossible because of other priorities, then let's look at perhaps doing something post-Lisbon before the election so that there is the opportunity for that dialogue. But ideally we'll do it in Lisbon if we can, as many people who have been interested there will be present.
Philip, are you happy with that? that Glenn maybe see if she can find a slot in on the schedule?
Exactly.
Okay.
I'll do that.
Perfect. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, we'll have to do it as a call. But I think that would be the most appropriate solution in this case. And if everybody's happy with that, I will conclude this item and hand back to Bruce if he's still on the call to conclude the meeting.
Yep, thank you, Philip. And I just want to confirm that I think in Sao Paulo I mentioned that I wasn't able to attend the meeting in Lisbon.
My circumstances recently changed, and I am able to attend, so I will be in Lisbon, and will be available should the council wish. So at that point, I will close the meeting and thank everybody for attending.
Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.